I think we're ready. I'll go ahead and call us to order the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting. If the audience would join the board in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome everybody on this fine snowy morning. Next is our public comment. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. Not seeing anybody moving to the mic. We'll go to consideration of minutes for 1:21 and 1:28:14.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The minutes are approved. Consideration of personnel actions.
Gail would move approval as submitted.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Consent agenda. And it looks like we're good to go with all items on the consent agenda.
No, I don't have to add, huh? Okay. I would move the approval of the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion and a second. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The consent agenda is approved. That takes us down to additional items. Discussion of time frame and budget for the coordinated long range plan. Leanne Harder.
Okay.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Morning. Good morning.
If the board will recall, this was on your agenda a couple weeks ago for some discussion, some feedback, and so staff was directed to bring it back with some additional detail. I think it was sharpen our pencil, and we did, and that is where we are. Again, this is following up on the CPAT report and recommendations of the Government Restructuring Committee and other projects that have come forward the past couple of years to develop a coordinated long-range plan, really a comprehensive plan that you can call it whatever you want, and any associated agreements that go with that. The table on the screen is what was in the packet for the board's meeting today. I just have broken it into a couple other slides so you see visually what looks like. It is an 18-month process if you include the additional month to do a RFQ, RFP, however we do it, if we're directed to do so. It's 19 months, but really the planning process is 18 months. Proposed budget for bringing consultant in would be $61,000 over the course of this fiscal year and next fiscal year. And I'll tell you about the implementation strategy here soon and budget impacts of that. Fiscal year 2014, so that's where we are right now, we would develop and release RFP and identify project team, no cost on that other than staff time. Vision development, we've already budgeted some funding for this, and this is also what ISAC will assist us in paying for, but at least for budgeting, $6,000 is what the cost would be on that. And then goals development would be $10,000. There would be two different consultants. IDM, Institute for Decision Making, will be assisting us with the vision, so they will not be part of the RFP for the overall planning process if we go down this direction. But additional $10,000 for goals development this fiscal year. Then that goals development carries on into next fiscal year, so more $5,000 additionally for that. Then the heart and soul, the big entities for consulting will be the research and analysis, and that's $15,000, and then the plan development, which is $25,000. Implementation strategies is what I said we would talk about. That starts next fiscal year and ends in fiscal year 2016, around September. At this point, staff is not proposing looking at budgeting anything for that. Internally, I think your staff is well qualified to develop the code. We'll work with the county attorney's office. And that's saying we would need to amend the code. At this point, we have no idea whether we would have to or not. I think our codes are pretty clear and well-defined. And really, what we'll want to do is make sure that we're matching the planning efforts. So with that, questions for discussion, and whether or not we do, if we go down this path, whether it's appropriate to include the proposed amounts in current and upcoming budgets, and then also give staff direction to go ahead and start that RFQ, RFP process. I don't know which we would do. I think we know the project well enough that we don't have to go through an RFQ. and then do the RFP, just go write the RFP. But that's something, depending on the outcome of discussion this morning, staff will come back to you with.
May I ask, that's probably not the best thought question, but I wanted to ask it anyway. So as you project the overall cost that is laid out here in your proposal, if we decide to go that direction, what are you interpreting or anticipating will be the final goal based on all the input and information that we would receive?
The final end product will be a comprehensive coordinated long-range plan for Story County.
And that plan probably would look at various components of things that we will need to do, and it may schedule be staged over more than 1 year, multi-year.
Right. The plan likely will have a transportation planning component. It will likely have a bicycle trails component.
Okay. Gotcha.
It definitely will have an economic development planning component. It's going back to that comp plan audit and filling in those gaps, which is why, because of the work we did with that comp plan audit, these numbers, if we were just starting out from scratch and having to do that analysis, these numbers would have to probably be greater.
At the end of the day, it is tying together so much of the work that's been done over the last 10 or 15 years, Wayne, and also creating the items to fill in the gaps of the work that has not yet been done, but ultimately tying it together. My big concern here is leading the horse to water but not making them drink. We can clearly commit, if we so choose, for Story County government to go down this path. We can't commit for the municipalities. There's so many that we can't commit for. We become the funder that's hoping that we can attract everybody into this process, that hoping that others are going to see the value in this process. But before we get to all that, I just want to talk dollars and cents first, if I may. As I recall, we've budgeted $60,000 for FY15 for this item. What you're showing us here says really $40,000 in FY15, but $21,000 yet this year. The $21,000 yet this year, is there an identifiable place that can come from, or are you counting on the board to go find $21,000?
I emailed Lisa, and I have not heard back. I think it's not in our budget.
It's not in your budget, okay.
We do have $10,000 for the facade improvement grant, and then $3,000 for the vision. So there's another $3,000 for the vision.
But some of that is going to come from ISAC.
Right, but we still have to budget for it.
Yeah,
up to $2,000 back in revenue on that. We do have to increase the budget.
Well, unless ISAC pays directly to the contractor, then we would not have to budget for that $2,000.
I had not thought about that.
Yeah, I don't anticipate that they'll want to do it that way.
They'll want to pay through us.
They'll want to have it flow through us as a county entity, you know, and so forth.
So then I would suggest, from a budgetary point of view, we keep the 60 in FY15, and then as we move through this process, it just becomes our responsibility to identify the funds to pay for it, knowing that we're going to pay $61,000 total for this, whatever fiscal year it comes out of, and then we're just going to have to identify paying it when things come due, which leads me to the second part. I really think there is huge value in doing this. I am less convinced that it's feasible to do it. One of the questions that I was asked early on is, are you talking about a vision and a coordinated plan for Story County government? And that one's really tempting to me, even though it's a small slice of the pie, because I know that the three of us get to control whether there's follow-through on that. What is really needed, what is really appropriate, is this full-on coordinated vision and plan. I just am skeptical of whether we can get there or not. Leanne, address that for me. I'm
there with you, and I think there's both benefits and drawbacks to pushing the schedule up and tying it into the visioning exercise that we'll be doing with Institute for Decision Making. The benefit is we'll be able to identify very early on, as we're starting down this path, the long-range plan path, how much the vision is cohesive in nature versus just Story County government. Is it, because if all the parties are at the table, if we can achieve a vision that looks towards a desirable future long term that is agreeable to majority of Story County and municipalities and school districts, whomever is involved in that process. The foundation will be set to make a coordinated long-range plan maybe more appealing, and the idea is probably more openness to that. I'll be honest, in 1998, when we first kicked off the update of the Story County Development Plan, all the municipalities at that point gave money towards that process. There was buy-in to that process. For whatever reason, it was only limited to a land use plan, and that was only for unincorporated Story County. I bring that up because I do think the paradigm has shifted somewhat. I think even though we may get pushed back, I think leaders are beginning to realize the benefits to coordinating this outweigh the risks. But keep on wishing my crystal ball would work. And I can't definitively say 100% of the communities are going to buy in, and this in 19 months from now we'll have a truly Story County comprehensive plan. I don't know. But I think it's the time is right to try it.
If we don't take the steps to put the plan in place, then there won't ever be buy-in. And I look at this maybe a little bit like I do the Squaw Creek watershed. I mean, we operate that strictly on grant funding. And I think everybody that sits on that board knows that their particular entity is not in a position to fund that. So we keep moving forward. And Bob Kindred told me one time, he says, you know, he says, we owe it to the people in the watershed and the municipalities in that watershed to keep going as far as we can. He says, if we get this plan in place that we're working on now and we don't see any more grant money and it's not funded, he said, that plan is in place. And at some point down the road, maybe somebody will see the value in that and decide that they're going to fund it and continue to work on that. But if the plan is not in place, then it'll never happen. So
yeah, and I think... based on something very similar, Linn County, Johnson County, through their strategic planning and so forth, they have seen other avenues open where now there is more buy-in and greater collaboration countywide from municipalities as a result of the initial efforts. And, of course, a lot of theirs really started through the disaster recovery and things of that nature, but it has opened up other means of collaboration. And I think the fact that we as a county would be, I use the word skin in the game, we're stepping up to provide, you know, some necessary funding to get to kick this off. I think there's a greater chance that we're going to have buy-in than ever before, because, you know, I think it has to start somewhere, and I believe that based on what you and your staff and all the people that have invested in this up to this point, I think the likelihood of us having greater buy-in and support is much better today than ever before. And I think Keith would be probably a good testament of that when you look at emergency management and all the different things that he's trying to do now with reaching out and bringing everybody in with a similar mindset in terms of future planning. So it's all the other components that could be added to that once we have developed that close working relationship with the various municipalities. And I think we're just on the crust of just really expanding that and making it truly just an exciting model for Story County and really looking at the overall future development and coordination. So I'm more optimistic now simply because the framework now is there. You guys have put together a tremendous template to guide us through this discovery. And in most cases, when you invite people to the table, they want to know, what is your vision? What do you see? And how do you see everybody being plugged into this? And I think the work is already, you know, in place for that to happen.
I agree with Wayne and Paul. There is real value in getting this done. I remain skeptical of whether we can get it done, but there's real value in getting it done, and it's absolutely worth us, I think, as Paul said, doing everything we can do to push this as far down the road as we can. There's going to come a point where it's going to be out of our hands, but it seems to me reasonable and prudent that we go ahead and push it as far as we can. And so, Leanne, I would ask that you guys go ahead and develop the RFP. I'm with you. I don't think we need an RFQ, and bring it back to us for approval so that we can take the next step.
I agree. Okay. Thank you. That moves us to agency reports. Access. Angie Schreck.
Hi there.
Hey. The lady in green. Oh, green birds. Oh.
Matter which one I go to?
I don't make sure the green light is on.
There's green lights on both.
Good.
Okay. Actually, if you don't mind, I'll bring some materials up to you.
Are these all different?
I'll take them. If you don't want to keep them, I understand.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's fine.
Part of the demonstration.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. I file all these so everyone blind is necessary.
All right. Well, my name is Angie Schreck. As many of you know, I feel like I was here a lot last year. I think it was probably just a couple of times, but it was an intense year last year. As you know, we've experienced significant change. One of those changes is demonstrated by the fact that you have three different brochures in front of you. We have been working hard this last year on separating our programs out. We don't have a shelter program brochure. We're still trying to figure out how to promote shelter services, and we think that probably the best way is through a lot of our collaborations with the housing and the shelter providers, and so we're going to keep working on kind of what that needs to look like in the next year. So as you know, you guys came through with additional funds for our shelter program in the last year. The total that we're working with in the current fiscal year is just over $16,000. And the United Way and the city came through with additional funds to make sure that we were able to keep our shelter open. Couple of updates on that. We worked on isolating our staffing for the shelter program. We used to have staff from various areas of our services kind of all drop in and help with different parts of our shelter operations. So now we're operating with two full-time staff, a one or possibly two work-study Iowa State students, and an AmeriCorps volunteer. It's a paid volunteer, but it's a very low-cost position, and then our part-time staff and volunteers. That has significantly reduced the operational costs of our shelter program, and in fact, in our most recent asset application, we reduced our unit cost for shelter. Now, we're asking still for the same amount because we are increasing the share of units that Story County pays for. And in that process of increasing the share of units that Story County pays for, we're also working hard to make sure that we are watching that balance of who's using those shelter beds. That's not an easy thing to do, because when somebody is seeking shelter, we try not to say, well, you know, we can help you because you're calling from Nevada versus Ankeny. We always have to weigh the risk that that person is facing. So we're going to really be trying to figure out the right systems, possibly reaching out to the other emergency housing providers and saying, do you have somebody who's been knocking on your door, and can you send them to us now that we have these open beds, versus waiting and seeing who calls for those open beds? So we'll keep you updated on that process. Couple of other things that have gone on in our shelter facility. In the last year, we partnered with Worldly Goods and Mustard Seed Farms to provide a cooking class on site, and really kind of encourage nutritional value of some of the donated foods that are available in our community. There's a lot of produce that's available during the summer months in our community. And a few weeks ago on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, we had we partnered with the Volunteer Center to do a big cleaning project in our shelter. We're always using a lot of volunteer groups in our shelter for staffing, for our evening and weekend staffing, and also for a lot of the projects to help us keep those operational costs down and keep it a welcoming environment. We are doing pretty good on our provision of shelter. As of November, when we prepared our mid-year asset report, we had provided 1,096 shelter nights to Story County residents. We're pretty much on pace to provide the same amount of shelter nights that we did last year, and that's with kind of a slow period of reorganizing our staffing, and so I think that we're going to be able to keep increasing those shelter nights in the next couple of years. Outreach services, I want to make sure that I emphasize that we are doing more than shelter. I think that sometimes I feel like I've had to focus a lot on shelter in the last year, and sometimes the community thinks of shelter as one of our primary services, but in fact, we do most of our services outside of shelter. That was a difficult transition as well. We separated our domestic abuse staff and our sexual abuse staff, and we've had quite a bit of turnover on our domestic abuse services side. A lot of our long-term staff actually stayed with the sexual abuse services side. With having each separate program, we have separate on-call systems, we have separate day coverage systems, we also have separate volunteer systems for each program. So this year that's been a significant strain, a challenge, but also an opportunity. We're using volunteers at a much higher rate in various different capacities. We're using volunteers to cover our crisis line from home. We're using them to be available to assist in on-call for any number of our staff and any number of our systems. So that's something that we're looking forward to as a challenge and an opportunity. Sorry, I know I'm giving you a lot of information. We were able to receive extra HUD funds this year to put towards homeless prevention money. We put a little bit of that increase towards shelter, but we're also putting it towards homeless prevention money so that folks may not need to come into a shelter when they're experiencing instability in their household. We can put $500 or even $1,000 towards rent to get them into a stable place very quickly versus having them bounce through some of the housing systems and then end up in an apartment or a rental living situation. A success with our hours, we're providing a lot more sexual assault hours as far as services go. I think that's because we've had the stability of long-term staff that have remained in that program. We're seeing quite a decrease in our domestic abuse hours, especially in our Court Watch program. And so we're trying to kind of figure out whether we need to connect with law enforcement or the court systems in different ways to make ourselves accessible to those folks in the court systems or in the process of reporting a crime. So I chair the Story County Coalition Against Domestic Violence, and that's something that we're talking about. How can we connect with those survivors before they go through the system to a certain degree or before they kind of find their way out of the system for whatever reason? That's kind of the summary. February is Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month, so we're trying to get into some of the local schools to talk with teens. The brochures, like I showed you, are some of our new materials that are out there. We also, today is our live date for our new website. It took an excruciating amount of time to have our new website up and ready, and so today that will be out there. The link for our website is on your materials, so if you would like to take a look, I think it's going to be a pretty good demonstration of what we're doing here in Story County. Any questions?
In terms of change over the last 3 to 5 years, I realize that we, you know, have a university population as well, a lot of students and young folks as well coming in, and then we also have some transit populations coming in from outlying states. Have you seen perhaps an increase in the need for services? And then the other question comes back to how would a individual who felt that they needed some assistance necessarily know who to contact? And, you know, if you could maybe just touch on a couple of those.
Okay. I'll start with kind of the populations. Iowa State University, we are seeing an increase, especially in the area of domestic violence. And I'm not saying we're seeing an increase in the number of domestic violence reports. We're seeing an increase in the number of those victims that are getting referred to us. They're currently working on a grant and trying to increase kind of their education university-wide to make sure that it's identified, because I think domestic violence can sometimes be a little more invisible when you're talking about a younger population. The transient population, I think that that has been... Did you say transient? Okay. I think that's been something that I've been in Access for 10 years. I've seen that pretty consistently throughout the last 10 years, especially when you're talking about the homeless population. We're working with the Emergency Residence Project often with individuals going back and forth between our facilities who are kind of have become residents of Story County, but they certainly have come from most likely other metropolitan areas looking for more resources here. And to be honest, I don't think we have a reputation for having those resources when it comes to housing, but we don't have that available. And so that's been a huge challenge. And tell me if you were thinking of any other thing along those lines. But the other question that you asked, how are people finding out about us? We really do rely on the systems that we're working with to tell folks that we're available, law enforcement, court systems, healthcare systems. A new project that we're going to, not a new, an old project that we plan to renew in the next few months is reaching out to local therapists and mental health providers and making sure that they know about us, but also that we know about them, because we really want to be referring back and forth. We don't want therapeutic and mental health services to be a last resort for other victims that we're serving. We want them to be able to get in very quickly if that's something that they're comfortable doing. And so we do our own assessment. We do a survey to make sure that when we're working with victims, they can kind of know who has what background in the area, who has what skills, who can take what forms of payment, and we'll also be kind of evaluating with the new federally qualified health center how we can make sure that we're very available to the any victims that are in and out of their doors. Does that?
Andy, I just want to commend you. When you stepped up to the leadership of this, it was clearly a trying time, and I've appreciated watching how hard you've worked. I really like the way you have focused out now the three different areas. I think that's completely appropriate, and we're so appreciative that you're here.
Thank you. Well, Story County has been so supportive of us in this process. It could have been a very different story a year ago if the funding hadn't come through and the support hadn't been there.
Well, thank you for the work you do.
Thank you.
Okay, it looks like Joe will report at a later date.
Is he out planting today?
I'm not exactly sure what he's doing today. Other reports. Building code feasibility study. Leanne Harder.
Yippee.
And Keith Morgan.
Hey, Keith.
Morning.
How hard is this storm going to hit us before you get into...
Moderate snow event is what we're looking at right now. Winds coming up in the evening will create issues.
Shelly, you can leave it on. I think they can see it, yeah.
Oh, no.
Can you wait?
Yeah, I can see it.
Just a few slides just to set the stage for the discussion. The building code feasibility study is an identified activity project in the Story County Multi-Jurisdictional Hazard Mitigation Plan. It simply says study the value of adoption and enforcement of building codes to include construction of buildings to withstand a natural disaster.
Hazard mitigation strategy.
Hazard mitigation strategy includes ideas for implementation. That did include task to conduct a feasibility study to determine applicable codes, create building code steering committee to assist P&D and code review and recommend local ordinances, and present to you all for board for consideration. Timeline, the feasibility study went from July 2014 through December 2014, which is how you see it identified on our work program. Steering committee then would kick in January 2015 through December, quite lengthy period there, and then we'd be looking at back to the board in January 2017 through June for decision making. Quite simply, the way the strategy is worded, it is to first and foremost conduct that feasibility study. I brought this to the board through my work session requesting funding to help with that, and that's why we're here today, to determine the level of how we go forward. Do you have anything you want to add?
First off, I'd just like to thank folks for the opportunity to look at this. This is should be a holistic view of your, and I say that because each jurisdiction needs to really embrace the idea of hazard mitigation and look and consider what are the best ways to create the greatest risk reduction within each community. This is one of your 8 hazard mitigation strategies for the plan, which will be adopted in the April timeframe. This plan has not been adopted yet. It's for you to study, to evaluate, and to determine what is the best way to approach the hazard mitigation in the whole for the unincorporated areas. And it's something that should be reviewed continually. In fact, it's a requirement that it's reviewed annually. And again, this is one of your 8 different hazard mitigation strategies.
And that's my question, Keith. When this body adopted our portion of the hazard mitigation plan and those strategies, what did we commit to as far as looking at building codes?
As far as looking at building codes, first off, I'll back it up and just say, what have you committed to when you've adopted these hazard mitigation strategies? It is a direction for, again, the jurisdiction to start with. You have, again, have 8 different hazard mitigation strategies that you have put forth in there. It is for you to hopefully continue on down and to determine the value of each and to continue to either work with them. You may find through your initial evaluations of them that some of these may not be practical. Hopefully you'll rank them and make them true action items. If nothing else, to have a plan on how you're going to attack all 8 of these strategies, and maybe there'll be some prioritization in that. But it is the starting point for you as the jurisdictional executives to start looking at these events. They can be removed. They can be new ones added, or the actual strategy can be revised on an annual basis.
Well, and that's my question. So we've got these action items, these strategies. At what point do we as the Board of Supervisors, is it appropriate for us to say, yeah, that's one of our strategies, but it's just not practical, just not reasonable? How far, once we get there, how far down the road do we go of still looking at it?
If, as the decision-making body, you decide that it's not practical, go back into your Stapley worksheet, which was accomplished the first time, and if something within that has changed, it would be at the annual review that you might decide to remove it as a strategy from the hazard.
Go back to the timeline.
So basically, again, as you indicated, this is one of 8 potential areas that we would be looking at during this analysis period. The first thing that comes to mind when you see the term building code feasibility or building codes, you're saying, okay, now we're going to mandate, and I'm using the word government mandate, certain requirements as far as building structures in order to withstand, say, an F4, just hypothetically, or if it's located in an area that is prone to flooding and so forth, that buildings wouldn't be allowed in that floodplain area. And I use that as an example. While we have the authority in the unincorporated areas, we don't have the authority, in my understanding, in the incorporated areas to determine that. But at the same point, I think based on what we're hearing on the national plane, in areas where there is a greater chance and frequency of disasters, be it tornadoes, be it flooding, or what have you, building codes has been one of the things that have been identified as that had the structure been built with concern for what the building would be able to withstand, the likelihood of a property loss and live loss would be minimal. And only a few areas around the country are now starting to really delve into that. But I see this portion of it being a very controversial part because we're talking about the developers that will be building these buildings and how that cost is then transferred to the potential property owner. I think we could do a great job of trying to sell why it's important and why people should basically take into it. But my concern would be is what would be our role, what should be our role as a government entity other than awareness and trying to get people to model certain types of development and using that as maybe the benchmark for future development if we know that there could be some potential properties subject to tornadoes, for example.
The
long explanation.
Within hazard mitigation, it's always a cost-benefit evaluation in there. And I might encourage you to look at this at different phases as to just determining first off, and this might be a narrow section of the overall development of code, but determining first off what is your exposure to the risk. For instance, here in our area, as part of our hazard mitigation plan, they've identified that 85% of the tornadoes in this area are EF0 and 1 or below, which is 130 miles an hour wind. But part of it is also to look at the number of structures in the unincorporated areas, because that's what you're focusing on, have been damaged by those tornadoes. Are there, you know, just preliminarily, are there simple techniques that can be utilized as a part of that to reduce those damages? And just start, that is the process that you start looking at to see, is this even a big enough issue for you to expend the time and effort as highlighted in here and move on from there? The key is make a conscious decision on this and gather as much information and work together as a body to make an informed decision later on is the key. And this was a starting point. This is one area where we might be able to reduce risk within the county. But I'm sure there are some other facts that could be looked at to determine whether how far to go on this and what is the exposure to your citizens and what is the benefits that you are providing yourself as a governmental entity when it comes to providing services if they should be incurred damages and what should be the responsibility of the individual, which is something that we stress, that it's from the community through government and business that we all come together and reduce these risks.
All right, so help me with the decision points. So the way I'm seeing this, first decision point is, does this body commit to doing the feasibility study from July through December? If we do that, so that's first decision point. If we do that, who does the feasibility study?
It would be managed through our department, but we would definitely need the assistance of a consultant.
Okay.
Given the amount we have on our work plate and the fact that none of us have been trained in building codes.
All right, so then we get to the end of that feasibility study, and depending on what we would learn, if there was something we could learn that would make us want to take it forward, there would be another decision point there as to whether we go through the steering committee and seek public input, ultimately to come back to us for a final decision point of do we enact anything. I mean, is that the three steps? So the first step is, does this group have a feeling one way or another about building codes that it's worth even doing the feasibility study? And so I would suggest the next step is get that on our, I know it's discussion today, but get consideration on our, in front of us so that we can make the call. Because if it's a feasibility study and we're directing it through you, did we budget dollars for this in 15?
No. The direction was to bring it back for discussion here and then before. No, nothing was added to the budget.
Nothing's budget, so we'd have to identify dollars if we go down this road. So I think the next step, and it seems to me the first decision point, is bring it back to us as a consideration item, and we take action from there. And then we see where it goes. And Keith, the way I see the hazard mitigation plan, we're fulfilling our commitment to that item just by considering, whichever way it goes, just by considering if we're going to go further with this one component. And then if we were to decide we weren't going further, then when it comes time to amend our plan, we just need to note that we've looked at that and this is the outcome.
I would say that's an appropriate steps for our hazard mitigation process.
I would also be interested, Leanne, in to see if there are any other communities within our state that have gone down this path, particularly when it comes to the building code component.
I can get you the numbers of counties and cities that do have adopted building codes and don't.
Right, right. That would be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Good. That takes us down to liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Mr. Clinton?
Briefly met with Ron Christian yesterday, pretty much just to see how things were going and where he was. And everything seemed to be okay. He didn't have any real anything new to report. I spent a little time discussing with him my meeting in Kansas City with the Regional Health Equity Council in terms of the clients that we serve in Story County. Are most of those, do they have some form of insurance, health insurance coverage? And he said, yes, almost all of them do. So that isn't an area for that particular client level. But I did tell him that I wanted to visit with him and Deb and see with some of our community action areas whether or not we had what was called navigators. And what I found out through an email yesterday is that Waterloo is the only one that I know of right now that has trained navigators that can actually come into a community and help with the education of how people need to go about looking at what health insurance options are available for them. So, but I was glad to see that he felt that we didn't have a void here as far as the clients in community life. And so I will be following up with Deb a little bit to see how she sees this factoring in. But other than that, it was a good report. He just again asked us to keep him informed as we're starting to have further discussions and move the process on. He felt that the meeting that you had with staff was very well. He's only gotten a few questions back. Most of it has been extremely positive. They just really want to make sure that we keep them informed. And there are, you know, a few rumors that are being floated around. We need to be aware of that. But by and large, they're feeling positive. And his explanation as to what the message is, I think, was right on target. And basically, that message said that as clients and who are receiving service, that should not change. Our number one goal is to make sure that the service is available. What may change is that it may not be a county-run program. And he said when they understand that, it's kind of lessened a little bit of the concern. So I told him we would keep him informed. And I know that we are just starting in that process, and he felt real good about that.
Yeah.
And then I have to work on evaluation for him and also with Deb, and I'll probably want to touch base with the two of you to see if you have any input, because I know both of you have also had opportunities to observe the change over in the last year.
Good. Well, Wayne, it's the item that we're dealing with that keeps me awake at night. It is I am so appreciative to Ron and all our staff at CLP for the buy-in and recognition that our number one priority is making sure that those that are receiving those services continue to receive those services regardless of who the provider is. As I believe the next step, Jessica, is that you and I and Deb are going to present something to the regional board, Wayne, that you sit on, just about what are what our ideas are for next steps to try to get this thing wound up to accomplish that goal. And then once we meet there, Paul, so that you know, my expectation is depending on where the regional board goes with our presentation, it'll come back before us, and that's where you'll start to see some of the rubber hit the road in terms of where we're headed on this thing. Is that reasonable?
Yeah.
Just as an update. And then for me, since County Attorney Holmes is here today, he'll get a kick out of this. I had a meeting Friday morning with the Central Iowa Workforce Investment Board, which is the what became of CTEC, all said and done. And they are looking at, well, they've already reconstituted themselves, but currently their chief executive is the governor. And it's creating some funding issues for local entities, and so they've pulled these counties back together again. I was there with county supervisors from seven other counties than us, and they're trying to pull this thing back together some way, shape, or form, to which they met with a lot of eye rolls. But it was suggested that if you've got a 28E that you want to present, write it. I said, I know our county attorney will have real interest in going through it with a fine-tooth comb. And so expect to hear more about that. I think Governor Branstad does not feel it's most appropriate for him to serve as the chief elected official for something that's supposed to be for local communities. And I don't know what the answer is, but I thought you'd be interested that conversation has resurfaced.
Good. Thank you.
I've got Board of Health this afternoon at 2, then Squaw Creek Watershed Thursday afternoon at 1:30. So come on by if you're looking for something to do.
Will that help me with my sleep over CLP?
Guarantee it. Public forum number 2, comments from the public on items not on this agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but may do so in the future. Not seeing anybody moving to the mic. We'll go to announcements from the supervisors.
No, just a note that on my calendar we had the statewide supervisors meeting, and that's been postponed due to the weather that is moving in the area. I think they're looking at the end of March right now, March 26, something like that, as the possible date. In the meantime, there will be our ISAC Spring School and our county a day is still on the agenda. And as the exec board, we will probably have a conference call because our meeting was to take place tonight. Plan for our spring school is probably not. It's going to happen sometime later in the month. But other than that, that's about it.
Township trustees tomorrow.
Good morning.
And how about those cyclones?
Huh. That's why I didn't sleep well last night. I was still keyed up. Okay.
Okay. The next is from our esteemed assistant county attorney, Esther Reynolds.
Good morning to the board. Pursuant to Iowa Code Section 21.5, sub 1, sub C, the Story County Attorney's Office recommends a closed session to discuss strategy with counsel in matters that are presently in litigation where its disclosure would be likely to prejudice or disadvantage Story County in said litigation.
Motion to go into closed session.
So moved.
Second.
Motion to second. Anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. We'll be in recess for about 5 minutes, and then we'll start closed session.
Good.
Go ahead. And I will put us back into open session at 11:15 and turn to the board for action.
Okay.
I'd move that we authorize our attorneys to enter into settlement. Final settlement of this matter.
Second.
Motion to second. Anything further?
Yes, we need any more on the record than that.
Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your work.
Absolutely.
Okay. I'd move adjournment.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.
Oh, overtime.
I just could not sleep.